Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Williams. This is the progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. Remember, you can also send me a tweet to EGBERTOWILLIES. That is, at Egberto Williams. Let us engage. It is politics done right.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Williams, your host. Thank you so kindly for being with me today. Today, we're going to have a good show. We're going to be talking all things Donald Trump. Let me first tell you that it's been a tough morning because in watching TV for once, I got a chance to see, well, I should say I got a chance to see for once, because this has been happening for some time now. The media is starting to get its act together. I think what's really happening is that the media is getting pretty darn scared. What do I mean that they're getting pretty darn scared? They're concerned that, you know what, their creation, Donald Trump, may actually win. They are scared that everything that they let slide because of ratings is coming to pass now. It's coming to bite them on their butt. So what does that mean? That really means, folks, that they have now created a Donald Trump that has viability to be the president of the United States. It's not a joke anymore. It's not funny anymore, but don't dare believe that this is something that they're doing, let's say, for self-interest, okay? Don't think that they're doing this because they just want to be good people now, good citizens now, good, what's the word that we want to use? That they suddenly want to be good to the people, give the people the information that they need, that they finally want to be unbiased, that they finally want to do what is necessary for the American people. That's not the case. What they do realize is a Donald Trump as president, what it really means right now is that they are in danger themselves. Because whereas if Donald Trump merely affects the average American citizen, so what, you know, the media, they are the elite, so they don't have anything to worry about. But if it turns out that what Donald Trump is going to do is clip their wings, clip anyone who opposes them, clip anybody who thinks, oh my God, now the media is at risk. Donald Trump, not only a clear and present danger for the average American citizen, Donald Trump is now a clear and present danger. Also, happy Saturday, Daniel. Thank you for coming. Is also now a clear and present danger for whom? The media. You notice the admiration for, we're going to talk about Russia a bit, but you notice the admiration that Donald Trump has for the president of Russia or the whatever he is of Russia. You notice that Donald Trump decided that this week he had new love for the way he handled several particular issues. Well, no más amigos. It won't be like that anymore. The media is scared, because if one thing we know about Putin is that the media is only as good. The media is only as good as a president or a society would allow it to be in the long run. And what happens now is a president Trump is a clear and present danger to their own freedom. And just this week, that started to become aware. Many became aware of that. I wrote several blogs. I would like you guys to make sure and go see those blogs. Let me see if I can pull some up here. But the blog, I'm going to start with the blog of the week, which has to do with the Clinton emails. I want to get that out of the way first. but I also want to talk about a whole look. One of the reasons I'm late for the, you know, I'm late in preparation for the show today is that AM Joy, Joy Ann Reed had a great piece today where she brought on Boris Epstein and Malcolm Nance to discuss the Trump's affinity or new or proclivity to love Donald Trump. And she really took control of that debate or that interview, because normally when Boris goes on to these shows, he just push like a bully through everything. And she made sure that he had to answer questions, and she made sure that America didn't just get the lying information that the Trump surrogates normally do on TV. What she made sure of is that she got him to talk. What was so impressive was, for the first time, I saw Boris red-faced. For the first time ever, Boris got red-faced because he found someone that did not tolerate the crap. He found someone that didn't allow him to just come into their studios like Chuck Todd. He bullies Chuck Todd. He bullies Joe Scarborough. He bullies all the guys. And here's this woman. This woman comes out, and she laid it on. She laid it into him, and she told him in no. Actually, I'm going to read this the paragraph that she said after we go to the blog of the week. But what I want to do is, I think to start, I better go with this. It's time for the weekly blog post. Okay, now the weekly blog post is titled, and believe it or not, I don't yet have the weekly blog post up. My bad. So I'm trying to get to it as I mully on here with my words. But the weekly blog post was actually titled this: Washington Post now calls it a minor email scandal. We're going to talk all things Trump, but I want to get this email thing out of the way first, because like I said, the media, they are suddenly coming to their senses. Here it goes. Is this the end? This is a subtitle I gave it. Is this the end of the Faux email scandal? And here it goes. It is about time someone in the mainstream media apply some objectivity to the Faux email scandal. In other words, the false email scandal, to the scandal that was no scandal. It really wasn't a scandal. It had to be hyped that way. Now, people say, oh, why did she have her own server and all that? You know what? I am a computer expert. I'm a mechanical engineer with a minor in engineering, and I have a software company. I write code. I write operating systems. I've written all these types of things. So let me tell you, I'm not talking from a position of ignorance. Let me just say one specific thing. The lie in this whole thing is that somehow she could get anything hidden. There are two reasons that is a complete lie. Reason number one, every email that you send is going through a pipe that the government is monitoring. There's no freedom here of email or internet freedom here in the United States at all. The government pipes, or rather, all of this goes into the government pipes. And sorry for that, I am having a little bit of issues here. Okay, the government pipes, the government can see every single email that you put out there. So nobody can hide emails from anybody, because once you have a server, that server is on ramp to the internet, and being on ramp to the internet, it means all that data is aspirated. Secondly, anybody that she sent an email to, whether in the government or otherwise, the copy of that email is there. An email in somebody is a one-to-one or one-to-many proposition. And therefore, nobody can hide email that isn't encrypted. This was a hoax from the very beginning, and this issue comes from the lack of knowledge that most people, most Americans have about how email and the internet work. You cannot hide anything on the internet. That's the reason I leave my stuff wide open. The only thing I have secure is my bank accounts, etc. But everything else on the internet, I really don't care, because I operate under the assumption anybody at any time can see all of my email. Good morning, Rhonda Carrington. Good morning, Daniel Ledeau. Good morning, Tom Hines. Thank you guys for being here. Now, So this is a warning first to everybody who is listening. If you are on the internet, anyone with a little bit of knowledge can see absolutely everything that you do. When people talk about security and the only thing that you have protection of on the internet is if you're sending an email and you encrypt that email, you and the other person know the key to unlock that email. That's the only modicum of security that you have there. And even that security can be broken. If I want absolute secrecy between me and another person, I whisper in their ear away from everybody else. That's the only security you have. So therefore, everything I do on the internet, I assume anybody can see, and I really don't care. I mean, that's why I get all the hate mails and people can find me easily, whatever the case may be. So let's talk about what the Washington Post did. A couple of days after Matt Lauer committed journalistic malpractice at the Commander-in-Chief Forum, the Washington Post changed its tune on Clinton's email. The Washington Post printed the following, and this is what they said. Judging by the amount of time NBC's Matt Lauer spent pressing Hillary Clinton on her emails during Wednesday's National Security Presidential Forum, one would think that her homebrew server was one of the most important issues facing the country this election. It is not. Washington Post is now saying it is not. There are 1,000 other substantive issues, from China's aggressive moves in the South China Sea to National Security Agency intelligence gathering to military spending, that would have revealed more about the candidate now and how they would govern. Instead, these did not even get mentioned in the first 5.5 precious prime time hours the two candidates will share before Election Day. While emails took up 1/3 of Ms. Clinton's time, the Post justifiably slammed Matt Lauer for a lousy interview, something the Washington Post themselves were guilty of. Of course, one major outlet slamming another isn't cool. Like the thin blue line with cops, there is some line with journalists as well. Lauer was criticized by a guest on Morning Joe the day after the interview, and the entire panel ran to his defense. The Washington Post seemed to do something similar with their eventual Lauer defense as well. Look, sadly, and this is now from the Post again, sadly, Lauer's widely panned handling of the candidate forum was not an aberration. Judging by polls showing that voters trust Donald Trump more than Ms. Clinton, as well as other evidence, it reflects a common shorthand for this election. And it was articulated by who else but NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick last week. You have Donald Trump, who's openly racist, he said. Then of Ms. Clinton, I mean, we have a presidential candidate who deleted emails and done things illegally and is a presidential candidate. That doesn't make sense to me, because if that was any other person, you'd be in prison. Well, you see, Kaepernick is a football player. I can excuse some of him not reading much. I'll get to your argument in a section six in a little bit, Lido. At least the WAPO editorial came to the correct conclusion. And what was that correct conclusion? The story has vastly exceeded the... Let me ask you guys to listen intently on what the Washington Post's conclusion is. The story has vastly exceeded the boundaries of the facts. Imagine how history would judge today's Americans if, looking back at this election, the records show that voters empowered a dangerous man because of a minor email scandal. There is no equivalence between Ms. Clinton's wrongs and Mr. Trump's manifest unfitness for the office. Do you think? Do you think? Look, we don't even have to get into whether he's fit for office or not. We just have to get into what he has done to the average American citizen, from ripping them off with a university to there is a litany of things. Not even conservatives, not even well-thinking, honest, moral conservatives would think this guy has the decency or this guy has the wherewithal to be president of the United States. It is, you have to separate the hate for someone against putting somebody there that has no right being there, that is mentally inept, I mean, people talk about he's rich. It's not that he's rich. He's a man built on debt. I mean, our capitalism doesn't require a lot of intelligence. It requires a lot of gall. Intelligence doesn't require anybody can go out there and sell something, and anybody can go out there and lie and sell something or tell the truth and sell something. We have good capitalists, the founder of Starbucks, and we have horrendous capitalists, Donald Trump. What I mean by that is the problem isn't capitalism if capitalism is used as a tool. If you use capitalism as a tool, it is great for the things that it needs to serve. But of course, for humanity, capitalism has no place. Capitalism knows nothing about humanity by design. It is just a structure, just like this mouse knows nothing about humanity. Capitalism knows nothing about humanity. Before I go further into the show, let me first read Ledo's question or suggestion. I think he says, and I can't quite see it there, so let me go ahead and see where else you put that question. But he says, so your argument is that the internet is not secure, and that therefore we shouldn't try to secure it, and because it can never be secure, we shouldn't try, and therefore it is perfectly okay for Senator Clinton. I am not trying to make that argument at all. I'm just stating a fact. The internet, for two reasons, because we're government with the Patriot Act, supported by most conservatives, which I don't support, but supported by most conservatives, gave the government the wherewithal to spy on all of its citizens. And in doing so, it means that you are never secure on the internet. You cannot be secure on the internet. That is a fact. Secondly, I stated that the other reason the internet, as far as emails are insecure, is that once you have sent a piece of email to another person, that email has traversed several servers, each of which have copies of that email, and the person receiving that email as well has a copy. So for anyone who believes that putting a server in their office somehow gives them some sort of security, that's a fallacy. Now, let me give one a somewhat exception here, and that is if Hillary Clinton is using her server as well to speak directly to a foreign entity, not an email that's going through the government servers, one may say, well, she is circumventing the State Department to do so. Again, another fallacy, because of the department that we have called Homeland Security, which has absolutely every piece of mail that any one of us has ever sent since 9/11. Okay? So let's be clear here. Nobody's hiding anything. This is hoopla that's being built so that we can have a discussion about nothing, so that we don't have to go into the details of the Republican Party's nominee. If we got away from all these issues and started to talk about bribery, if we went and started to talk about associations with mobsters, because again, the guy was a builder. I mean, it's hard to be a builder and not have that sort of association, but we have to be frank here as far as what is going on in the country. So, Mr. Ledo, the reality is, I am not saying you can try to secure the internet as best as you can. I do with my bank. We have double logons, and we have security MSM, but you know, we also have laws to protect that if you are hacked and it's not your fault, you're not responsible for the financial damage. We have to have those laws because the internet is open to all, you cannot have absolute security on the internet. Punto final. No se puede. Esa cosa no es imposible. It's impossible to have any sort of true security on the internet. So what you do is you just, to put it bluntly, in my case, I just live an honest life. I have nothing to hide except my bank account, which I put a little bit of limits onto that. So that's where we're at. Not a red herring argument at all. It's a fact. Now, you also said, Ledo, capitalism is based on human nature. Therefore, it knows more about humanity than any other system. There is a great fallacy. I don't even think the founder of capitalism, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now, would say that. what ones you have to distinguish free enterprise and capitalism. They're not the same. Capitalism occurs in free enterprise systems, like in democracies like the United States, and capitalism can exist in Russia, and capitalism can exist in China. In fact, China is one of the largest capitalist countries in the world. It's one of the most repressive countries in the world. Capitalism is a structure and nothing more. So what we do in America is conflate all these ideas. And if you conflate enough ideas, you keep your population ignorant. And by keeping your population ignorant, Donald Trump and other, and even Hillary Clinton to some extent, because I'm not a fanatic. I'll be frank. I will be voting for Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton is the best person out of everybody that is currently running for president. Period. There's no arguments. We can go on intellect. We can go on experience. We can go on any measure. That's a fact. And anyone who wants to debate that fact, we can. But anybody who cares about America, really, and anybody who is mature enough to say, I don't like anybody that's running, but if I look into what is best for the United States of America, if I look into what is best for my pocketbook, if I look at what is best for my children, if I look at what is best for the people I care about, it is impossible for one to choose a Donald Trump. And the reason why is, look, none of these politicians particularly care about anybody as an individual. So anybody, I don't sit down there and love. I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I don't love Bernie Sanders. I wasn't addicted to Bernie Sanders. I wanted Bernie Sanders to win because I am a person who believes in socialized medicine because it's the only thing that is honest and moral. I also believe in a concept of where people, average American citizen, all should have equal access to success. Capitalists don't believe that, period. Capitalists do not believe in equal access to success, period. Capitalism simply doesn't care. Now, we use capitalism as a tool to say, okay, I want to build something. I get capital. I go ahead and I get capital. That's just money, assets to put something together. That's what it's all about. No more, no less. And it is important for the average American citizen not to conflate capitalism, democracy, or anything else. Capitalism is a structure created to make money for those who own capital. Nothing more. If you don't have capitalism, if you don't have capital, you cannot participate in capitalism. You are simply an indentured servant. Most Americans today are slaves. We don't call it slaves because we have nicer homes than what slaves had in the day. But most Americans today are slaves. If you doubt it, stop working. Stop working for a little bit and see how free you are. We are slaves to a system. I am a slave. Daniel Ledoux is a slave. Rhonda is a slave. We don't call it that anymore, but we are forced to do certain things to live a certain way. We are slaves. Okay. Now, Donald Trump is not a slave because Donald Trump is the one of those who have capital to pull the strings that run the system. What we should be having are things known as collectives. You work in a company that builds stuff, everybody should profit from that company. Everybody should be, because they are the ones producing, not the guy sitting down at the pool with his tea, getting the profits from the persons who are sweating, bleeding, and sometimes dying. Someone would say, well, he risked his capital. That is so important. He risked his capital, and the only reason we are doing this is because if he risked his capital, he takes risks. Maybe he loses sometimes. Well, do they ever lose? Think about it. In the aggregate, the stock market never loses. And there's a reason why. Because it's the way the system is designed. Here's the deal. I love the way moralists, people that are supposed to be moral, Christians, and all these folks like to come on and say, oh, you know, socialism is bad and capitalism is, you know, I even found a pastor who wrote an article talking about Jesus being a capitalist. I mean, that is anathema to Christianity. Capitalism is anathema to Christianity. It is a tool. There's a lot of things that we do that's anathema to Christianity. Capitalism is one of them. Okay? But it is important for us to know that when we talk about capitalism, Donald Trump and all these guys, you don't matter. You don't matter. The only thing that matters is the actuality of having capital and what's necessary to maintain that. You are just an appendage. You are just the byproduct. You are just the widget. Nothing more. Nobody cares about you. Period. You are there to make somebody money. You go into your office to work. They are not doing that because they love you or like you. You're there to make money. That's one of the reasons I have always, you know, I worked for the man for 5 years and thereafter went completely solo. Punto final. That's it. I love that. I haven't used that Rwanda in a while. Punto final. Claro que sí. But anyhow, it is important that we understand that. When Americans understand that capitalism has nothing to do with democracy, because remember, China is a capitalist country, and that capitalism, the sole purpose of capitalism is to maximize profits for those who have capital, then we as average American citizens can then feel free to say, well, we want to create a system that works best for us. And by the way, folks, I'm not a person that says I want everything nationalized to a collective, because again, I have a software company. I believe in building stuff and profiting from what I build. But there are certain things that don't belong there. Healthcare should not be in the capital markets at all. It's immoral, period. If you love people, you cannot love a healthcare system the way it is today, period. You cannot. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, who believes in the full and entire privatization of the medical system? Senor Trump. And do you think that's a good thing? You think the EpiPen story was one of those stories that is something that's done in isolation? The EpiPen story wasn't real. The EpiPen story was a sort of a silly story. Oh, what are you, Venezuela? Besides hungry, Venezuela? No, sir. Let me first, you know, again, when you have bad media, bad things happen. Let me give you a short synopsis of Venezuela, okay? I was definitely a supporter of the now dead president of Venezuela. I think he did, what should I say? And I'm looking up, I want to look up something here to see if I can find it. I really want to find it, because a lot of people don't understand Venezuela. Venezuela is sitting down on Hugo Chavez. Yes, Hugo Chavez. You know, thank you, Max Goto. Hugo Chavez. Let me tell you something about Venezuela, folks. Venezuela is sitting down on or sitting on top of an ocean of oil. An ocean of oil. Yes, it's not the best oil. It has a lot of sulfur in it. And, you know, when we bring it here to the United States, we got to crack it and take out the sulfur. But the sulfur is an element that's used for other things as well. But El Señor Hugo Chavez, when he got into power, the vast majority of folks were in poverty. They are sitting on a sea of oil that is sold at that time at over $100 a barrel. And the darn citizenry are poor. And the American companies and other companies that are going in there are buying the oil for next to nothing and sucking it to the United States citizens, selling them high-priced oil for oil that they're getting for next to nothing and mining for next to nothing. Here comes Savior Hugo Chavez and said, eso no más. This is the commons. The oil is the commons. The oil belongs to the people of Venezuela. Not to the plutocrats who have capital, who can mine the oil, take it, profit from it, pay a few bit of taxes, put stocks in Exxon and all these other companies who own then the oil and the people who live in Venezuela get nothing or get very little. That is capitalism for you, Senor Ledo. That is what. So when everybody says, oh, there comes the socialist, Chavez was a direct result of the pilfering of the Venezuelan people by the plutocracy. Not only the American plutocracy, but the Venezuelan plutocracy. Here comes Chavez. He goes ahead and he nationalized quite a bit. People are fed. People are happy. The middle, the poor started to move up. The fastest growth in the poor in the world for some time. But we can't have that. We cannot have that. Because if the rest of the world sees what Hugo Chavez is doing within his country, where he is, yes, sharing the wealth. Not sharing the wealth. He's redistributing the wealth the way it needs to be redistributed, not in the hands of a few. Okay, the world can't find that out. Because what happens when Americans themselves find out that they are being pilfered as well? Ledo, you don't think Americans are pilfered. You don't think you're a victim of the same type of pilfer, because America is a very smart country. They did it differently. They made sure, I'm coming to you in a little bit, John, they made sure that Americans live just with enough wealth. The guards of those gates, they have just enough wealth so that they don't go with the pitchforks to get the rest of the plutocracy that is pilfering them. Just enough rights. And that's what we do here in the United States. We make you just wealthy enough. But we don't know what real wealth is. We don't know how much wealth is being extracted out of our country. We don't know that in those vast lands that you see in Colorado, the vast lands you see in Alaska, and all these other places where we are mining, all these other places where we're taking, that all of that wealth is just going to a distinct few. America is a very rich country as well. We have more resources than just about any other country on the planet. But we keep that 20% of Americans in just the right state, that they are the ones that control the media. They are the ones that are the engineers. They are the ones that are the lawyers. They are the ones that are the doctors and all these guys that are living at this level. And the bottom 80% are fighting day by day for survival. The bottom 80%, you know, the unions are gone. The bottom 80%. They're the ones that are trying to get a job and they can't. So what do we do in it? We get a Trump, and a Trump is the guy who now says, hey, the reason you have a problem, America, you see that black guy, you see that immigrant, you see that Latino, you see that Chinese guy, he's taking the job. He's taking your birthright. That is why you're having the problems that you're having. That is what makes Trump so dangerous. The division that he puts in the people, file on false information. That is what makes him that's what makes him dangerous. Because the reality is, the problems in the United States are not that we don't have great workers. The problems in the United States is not that a whole lot of people are racist. Because you know what? Racist only comes from ignorance. And once people are no longer ignorant, the vast majority are no longer racist. We still have the primo that we have in the back of our heads, but we're still not there. Come on in, John. I think I've done a little much talking now. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. Good afternoon, Egberto. How you doing?
Talk to me, my friend.
All right. Yeah, I just want to, you know, agree with you, you know, about Trump. And I guess we've been having this conversation now for about, 14 months now. And I was pretty, you know, right out of the bat, I was, you know, pretty strongly, you know, calling him a racist, which he is. And it's funny to hear him, you know. A couple of weeks ago, he's doing, you're racist, you're racist, you're racist. And I'm like, yes, exactly, that's correct. And, you know, the whole idea of, you know, what I call pander Trump, this Kellyanne Conway invention that he kind of said, you know, basically I think what she told him is like, you can't win this race, you know, alienating people the way it is. But, I mean,
right.
I know, and so, you know, he tried to make amends. I know it was a fake amends. What he's really trying to do is go to voters and say, you know, you can't win you can't win white votes if they think you're racist, because, you know, it's amazing how many of the population, especially the Republican Party, will support a racist just because they believe in the economic vision that he has, you know, which is basically what you're talking about, a plutocratic rule, you know, where they want to increase income inequality. They want to make the rich richer. They want to make the poor poor. And so
I want to kind of stop you right there for one reason only, John, because first of all, you're right. Right. But when we've been using that narrative of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer as if, it, you know, as if there isn't a psychology behind the reason for doing that. Right. There is a psychology behind the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. And it goes as follows. And if you go back to the time of the Powell Manifesto noticed one thing. As we liberalized, as people became more intelligent, as people went to school, as people learned how the system really worked, they realized that, wait a minute, we're getting screwed. We are getting screwed. We've been screwed from the inception of this country. Actually, folks, you need to realize that when the Constitution was written, it was only written for property-owning people. And the only people that owned property were white men. So think about that, folks. That was our Constitution. Our Constitution codified that only less than 5% of the population could really vote because of that dependency. So let's be clear here. This didn't start recently, but there's a documentary that I made, well, we made with Move to Amend called Legalized Democracy. Look that up. If you go to my website, egbertowillis.com, we have it on a CD, but if you go to egbertowillis.com, I also have the entire documentary. It's about a 30-minute is it 30 minutes or an hour? I don't remember what it is. A documentary that I have on the website, egbertowillis.com. Do a search on legalized democracy on my website. So, or go to Google and type Egberto Willis and then type as well as legalized democracy. Full documentary. And one of the things we showed in that documentary, John, is the following. We have been, since the inception of this country, attempting to liberalize this country in order to move things forward. In other words, to empower more people each time over. Women, blacks, Latinos, Chinese, everybody else. Empower folks so that we are all on equal footing. And it's been a steady growth with fallbacks. We had fallbacks back during the Red Scare. We had fallbacks during parts of just before the Roosevelt, FDR's, and his not great. Great Society was Johnson. FDR was, what was FDR? You know what I'm talking about.
It was he just led the country. He's the greatest president in our history.
We have a policy.
New Deal is probably what you're talking about. Right.
Exactly. So we have all these things, okay? And we constantly move the country forward. But when Reagan came in, Reagan made the concerted effort to codify into law after the grunt work was done. The Powell Manifesto laid out the grunt work, create the Heritage Foundation, create all these different foundations that lie to the American people, that teaches them lies. In other words, they need to believe these things so that when Reagan came about, it was easy for him then to lie to the American population and somehow say, well, trickle-down economics actually works, because you had a whole body of thought afterwards that made believe that Keynesian economics was a fallacy. So we have to look into all these issues and understand all these issues and understand where it came from. So when John speaks about the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, it's by design. America, especially with the advent of the internet, needs to dumbify itself, make ourselves more dumb. The plutocracy need to make ourselves more dumb. That is the reason why you have a lot of right-wing and some left-wing sites, because I don't want to give the left-wing a break. The vaccination thing, I'm crazy about how our left-wing side continue to promote some sort of a vaccination. Let's not go there. Get your kids vaccinated, folks, and you get vaccinated. All right? The risks the risks are definitely not worth taking. Anyhow, so therefore, it is imperative that we be dumbed down. The plutocracy needs us dumbed down. And that's the reason why they take monies out of school. They make schools very expensive. It's not only about taxes. Because, look, these guys are so rich, all these things are affordable. We could increase taxes enough to get everybody a free education. We could increase taxes enough for all these things to enable folks to start your own businesses. But that would be a danger to the plutocracy. Why? Because think about this. I have a software company. I write software. I don't anymore now that I'm a full-time political activist. But I built my, my house was created because of my software company. I bought my cars because of my software company. I put my daughter through college because of my software company. I made money with my software company. But now it's time to give back. Now it is time to tell the average American folks, hey, we need to ensure that everybody who wants to do something on their own can. Starts with healthcare. You couldn't do it if you didn't. You couldn't form your own company because you couldn't get healthcare. You can't afford healthcare if you don't work for somebody else. So I could go on and on and on. But let me, again, let me bring John back into the conversation. John, you wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying, you know, that getting back to Trump, you know, I mean, what he's trying to do is you know, let's say this week and all of his, you know, tough guy rhetoric, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, which I really think is going to go against him. I mean, because, you know, you look at Putin, he has an 8% approval
right.
rating in America. And so, you know, he's praising him. And also the fact that Pence is doing it also is unbelievable. I mean, I guess he probably forced him to do it. But I mean, you know, saying that Obama is weak, you know, I mean, again, there's certain things that Obama did great. You know, I don't agree, obviously, with TPP. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, a full line supporter. But, I mean, you know, let's face it. Obama, one of the main reasons he was elected was in 2008. That he wanted to get us out of the war. And so, I mean, I've said this on the show before,
right.
but I mean, I'm not going to go into it again. But I mean, you know, when I see, you know, the level of journalism, and again, I don't want to, you know, put too broad of a brush because we've had this argument before. But I mean, let's talk about Matt Lauer and the job that he did. I mean, he was absolutely awful. He was not informed in the least. I mean, and, you know, he spent 10 minutes on the emails, which are just totally ridiculous. The emails are just, I mean, they're so blown out of proportion. I mean, you know, this, you know, if we're really going to be this to talk about the emails, I mean, the email problem was a problem during the Bush era. You know, they should have corrected what they did later after Kerry came in, made more enforceable rules. I mean, everybody knows that Powell, you know, did the same thing that Clinton did, except nobody forced him to show all the emails. So we really don't know what he did. And And so also, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not saying there's some blame, you know, on Obama, you know, because, you know, it should have been secured earlier. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, let's just be honest about, you know, where the blame lies. And, you know, was there real damage, you know, to this? Well, the FBI said, no, there wasn't real damage. I mean, and also we already know that government servers have been hacked, that are supposed to be, you know, totally secure, that they have been hacked. And so, you know, all of this, you know, false equivalency that's going on, and again, you know, I'm not a huge Clinton supporter. I definitely will vote for her. But I mean, you know, I mean, I want her to do well. I want to have her, you know, be given a chance to do well. But, you know, I am also looking forward to 2020, you know, and if
it's more than a chance to do well. You know, what we do a lot of times is we elect the president and then we go back home. And what I'm trying to do with a lot of my programs here and at KPFT is to tell folks, we're not going to elect Hillary Clinton and stay home. We're going to elect Clinton and put the coals under her butt. In other words, we're going to elect her and say, you know what? You said this, you said that. We're watching you. Don't do it. You definitely will be primaried. And not only will you be primaried during the period that you're serving, if you don't serve, we will be out there in Washington, D.C. And I guarantee you that we are gearing up for those issues right now. I mean, to think that Hillary is going to walk in there and everybody's going to walk back. No, señor. Eso no va a pasar. That's not going to happen. What we're going to do is we, the activists now, are, you know, we're not going to do what was done with President Obama, which I think was wrong. President Obama, having been the first black president and knowing that the right was going to be coming across with President Obama from a racist modal and much more, we sort of had his back, to be blunt, unnecessarily at many times. And we should not have had his back so well, because what it did is it softened him. We needed him in a lot of times to have been more hard, to be harder than he was. But you learn from your mistakes. It's a mistake that we won't make with Hillary Clinton if Hillary gets into power. Now, what I'm telling my viewers now, and I'm speaking as an independent person here, but anybody not voting for Hillary Clinton right now, they are putting my health care, they are putting my security, they're putting my, and when I say my, I'm talking my wife's, my daughter, yours, my friend, and all the folks that I'm working with, they are actually materially hurting their fellow man. And that, you know, there are times that you can say, well, we can have either one of these guys. In this case, I am sorry. And everybody who listens to me know I was a devout and still am supporter of the policies of our guy. I still support Bernie, his policies. But Bernie is not on the ticket. Bernie is not running. And the only person, and I also support the Green Party, Jill Stein. I love what Jill Stein is talking about, but Jill Stein won't be president. And I think it is now on our part to be honest with ourselves and with the people that we are around. Jill Stein will not be president. Johnson would not be president. The only thing good about Johnson is his social side, but his economic side is just as conservative, if not worse, than, let's say, any mainstream conservative a la Paul Ryan or anybody else. So therefore, anyone who's listening to this, I'm telling you straight out, you are hurting yourself. You're not hurt. Look, if Hillary loses, it's just an ego, a pop in her ego, nothing more. Hillary is a multimillionaire. Donald Trump is a multimillionaire. No, he's not a billionaire. He's a multimillionaire. He owes too much money to be a multibillionaire. He's a multimillionaire. Don't believe this crap you see. And these folks will be fine. They don't sit down. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Jill Stein, Johnson, I don't remember his first name at this point.
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. They don't give a hoot about any one of us. Let's be frank. The only folks that care about you are the people that are around you. Yours truly, of course, because that's the reason I do this stuff, out of love for community, out of love for citizenry. That's the reason that's been done for free and trying to get people connected. But none of these folks love you. So the passion that we have for the Stein and the passion we have for Bernie Sanders and all of that, forget it. They don't know who you are. All those nice, passionate emails you get from the Democratic Party or from Bernie or anybody else, Bernie and those guys don't have a clue that you're getting them. But we have to be honest with ourselves. We vote in our interests. We should always vote in our interests. In voting for our interests, we're voting for country. In voting for our interests, we're voting for our family. In voting our interests, we're voting for our society. And at this point in time, your vote is Hillary Clinton. Absent that, and this isn't because I love Hillary Clinton. This is because it is the pragmatic answer. It is a pragmatic answer. And what do we do after we elect Hillary Clinton? We hold Hillary's butt to the fire. And we let Hillary know. And we don't let Hillary know by waiting till 2 years in or 3 years in that she will be primaried absent doing what she does. We start now. That is what our the our revolution is all about. Making sure that we start to stack the deck now, not waiting for her to do bad things. Making sure that we stack the deck now. We're looking for candidates all over the country. And it's not only our revolution. It is brand new Congress. I don't have an affinity for any one particular organization because I don't think any one particular organization owns the right to say, I have the solution. Egberto Willis, I don't have all the solutions. I know there are problems. I can enumerate the problems. John, I'm very sure, can enumerate the problems. But that's the reason why I support our revolution. I support Brand New Congress. I support all these organizations on the progressive side that say they're looking to do things that are going to change our Congress to ensure that the average American citizen, conservative and liberal alike, will have a better... You see, here's the thing, folks. Conservatives are good people. I think conservatives will come around when progressive tenets, they actually see working for them. Right now, we have a lot of lies spinning, right? They don't know for sure. Because there are enough lies spinning that just maybe it wasn't Obamacare that has kept healthcare insurance from going through the roof. It's going up, but not through the roof. But we don't know that for sure. Maybe it's not Democrats and liberals or progressives whose policies under which the economy always does better is the reason. Because, you know, as Newt Gingrich would say, when Clinton did his thing to blow up the economy or to make the economy much better, we had a whole lot of Republicans in Congress. He's right. And by the way, I am not one of those supporters who think that the Clinton economic policy was anything grandiose. I think it was just good. Grandiose would have been somewhat what Bernie has to say, policy-wise, and to put it bluntly, even Bernie is not left enough. And the reason Bernie could not be left enough is that this country has a problem with understanding what a real democratic socialist state looks like. It's a free state. It's a state where you have everything on your side. Why? Because those things that should remain in the public domain remains in the public domain. Those things that should be private or can be private are private, and those things that the state should take care of, the state should take care of. People that are paying 50% in taxes but have no fear about unemployment, but have no fear about Social Security, but have no fear about healthcare, that's a bargain. Because right now, if you pay your taxes and see what's left and add the insurances that you pay, you know, I pay over $3,000, John, I pay over $3,000 a month in different types of insurance. I was adding that up the other day. Imagine that. I'm paying $36,000 a year to insurance companies. Think about that. $36,000 a year to insurance companies. That's money that just go poof out of my economy. You notice insurance guys are the richest guys around? You know why? Because, you know, the insurance is a good scheme. But we have to have it because that is what we have in our capitalist system. Those are the things that needs to change. And how do we change it? Learning. How do we change it? Understanding that things do not have to be that way and no longer being fearful. That is how you change things. And that is what my program, I hope, throughout my blogging, throughout the radio shows, throughout interfacing with smart folk like John and others, that we are going to be able, one person at a time, you that are listening as well, conservative or otherwise. No, Ledo, that is not, I want to say what Ledo just wrote, laughing out loudly. The old idea that 60 years of socialism fail is just cause it hasn't been properly done yet. We have never, ever, Ledo, don't buy into the fallacies. We have never, ever came close to socialism. And by the way, we're not looking at the dictionary for socialism. That is not the definition that we're talking about. We're talking about keeping things in their proper places. All right? And believe it or not, and Brother Ledo, I know who you are. You're my friend. So my economy will do you much well, will do you very well if you were to get off of the particular level of thinking that some have imposed on you, if you give yourself the freedom to open up and say, what's best in a private economy? What's best in the state part of the economy? And what's the, I don't care where it lies. But you have to have that honest discussion. You have to have that honest numbers. You have to look at the numbers. The numbers are irrefutable. And we can go down the line with numbers and profits and what's expenses anytime. But it's important for us not to buy into the fallacies of the Powell Manifesto. The Powell Manifesto is the reason we have a Tea Party. The Powell Manifesto is the reason we have the Heritage Foundation. The Powell Manifesto is the reason that unions are dying. Corporations tell you we work together because together we can accomplish more. But when workers try to work together, somehow that's wrong. And they talk about the corruption within the unions. Yes, unions are corrupt, just like corporations are corrupt. But they're made up of people. You get rid of the corrupt people and you keep putting those good ones in. And if they get corrupted, you recycle it. It's not a perfect world. But every single corporation in this country has a union. They don't call it union because union is a bad word, just like they once made liberal a bad word. When you hear about American Society of Mechanical Engineers, that's a union. When you hear about the production unions, or when you hear about all those trade unions that come to Texas for these different symposiums or whatever, those are unions. These are industrial companies getting together to work as one, so that they'll have maximum push when they go to Congress to get something done. That's what it's all about, folks. And why is it that workers are the only ones that people frown on when they can talk about unionizing? Folks, I'm down to my last 2 minutes. So therefore, oh, I got a new caller. John, let me go. This is my friend from Jack. Jack, I just saw you on. Give me a quick closer, friend, because we've got to close the show down.
Okay, what I want to say is that I agree with everything you say. Let's talk about health insurance. We need more for Hillary to be more.
John, I'm running out of time.
ISIS and all that stuff about ISIS and
I hear you, Jack. We'll talk next time. Call earlier next time. John, give me a quick 30 seconds closer.
All right. First, I want to say, it's good to hear Jack. I know he was getting ready for the operation, so I hope the operation went well. I hope he's doing well because he's been a regular caller. I just want to say that there's a reason why people in the Nordic countries are the happiest people in the world. They have polls every year. It's because they don't have to worry about health care. They don't have to worry about paying for an education. And that is an incredible, it helps the mind take away the anxiety. And this is all. And so, socialism is not a failure. It's a complete success. And ask most people who live in the Nordic countries, they're extremely happy.
Thank you very much, John. Look, folks, thank you very much for watching the show. Thank you very much for listening to the show. Thank you very much for calling into the show, folks. We're going to continue this. I try to keep the show open. I don't want to go ahead and always be quoting numbers and statistics and all of that because, again, I just want folks to get the gist of it. Lado, as far as should unions be mandatory, absolutely unions should be mandatory, I think. And the reason why I think unions should be mandatory is because everybody gets the benefits from the union. You either have them or you don't. I mean, you can't be not paying into a union and somehow get the benefits of it. Of course, it should be mandatory. Now, folks, just like taxes are mandatory. Folks, thank you very much for listening to the show. I appreciate the time that you give me. We are going to continue this discussion over and over again. I want to hear more voices. I hope more of you would call into the show. More of you would write after the show. My name is Egberto Willis. This is Politics Done Right. You have a wonderful rest of the Saturday, and do what you got to do. Thank you very much, callers. All right. My favorite